morning and welcome to Wake Up and Stay Woke. Good morning, Ricardo. How are you?
Good morning. I am fine. How are you?
You know, I didn't know you were my homie. I'm from Louisiana, and I read your bio, and I'm going, oh, wow. I think I met you a year or so ago at a meeting, and you got away before I could talk with you. So I was so excited when I read your bio and said, oh, wow, that's Ricardo. Well, for those of you who don't know him, welcome to Wake Up and Stay Woke. And Ricardo Thomas is a graduate of Loyola University in New Orleans, Louisiana. He has a bachelor's degree in business administration, a degree in finance. He's a registered financial consultant. And as we go along, you're going to learn so much more about him. And you're going to know that he is well qualified to talk about this subject. He is actually going to give us a lot of free information. I am so excited. You know, I'm a lawyer, but I don't know all of that stuff that he's going to talk about and tell us about this morning. I know you have a lot of subjects you can talk about, and I'm so glad that you agreed to come on Wake Up and Stay Woke. Now, just as you are on my program today, I'm on Jim Inkster's show in Baton Rouge, I think it is. He comes. I'm on quite frequently there. So let's get started. I know that all of you out there who are listening, you're going to want to know some of these things. So get your pen, your pencil, your paper so that you can write some of these responses. And if you have friends out there who didn't get a chance to hear it today, don't forget, you can always go online and get the information. We replay it. So there's a real advantage here that we can replay the information on WPFW. Well, there's a lot going on today, so let's just get right into the conversation. And as we go along, as I said, we'll learn more about you. But I thought that I was probably the biggest volunteer person in this country. But when I read about all the things that you do, I said, wow, I think he's got me beat. And, you know, in a way. So maybe sometimes
I'm just following your lead. That's all.
All right, then. Well, let's go right to it because we've got a lot to talk about here. My first question is going to be about intestate. Let's just talk about the meaning of that so that Mr. Gregory always told me, let's talk about it so my grandma can understand it. So
absolutely,
we are ready for you to get started. I don't want to waste any more time. They'll know how great you are and all the wonderful things you're doing as we go through this. All right. It's on you.
All right. Well, thank you again for having me. And let's jump right into it. So you started with a very good topic there, an issue. What is intestate? And unfortunately, we learn about this particular subject the hard way and at the wrong time too often. And essentially, what dying intestate means is dying without a will. And when you die without a will, that means you leave the decisions of your assets and how they are to be dispersed and who they are to be dispersed to, you leave that to a court of law or a judge. And that may not be the way you want it for your assets to be handled. And so by having a will, it allows you, the way I like to put it, is to still have control from in the ground by leaving those instructions and determining how those assets are to be distributed. And something that's going to be a theme throughout our conversation today, by having a will and not dying intestate, it helps you to promote family peace. And we both know oftentimes when someone dies, that's when the madness starts. So as I tell my clients all the time, when you put it in writing, all they can do is get mad and stomp on the ground, but nobody's listening.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we were blessed because even though my mom, we didn't know she had a will, let's put it like that. I have sisters and one brother. One brother is gone already, and he did leave a will. But my mom wrote everything out, but she put it in her Bible. Now, she didn't get it professionally signed and get witnesses and all of that. But I have a sister who lives in Houston, and we call her Miss Church Lady. While we were waiting there, after my mom had made a transition, my sister went to that Bible, and there it was in the Bible, in my mom's handwriting. We all knew that. We agreed with it. And everything went very smoothly from beginning to end, to the colors she liked, to the everything. My mom had written it out. And what a blessing that was, because I didn't have to fuss with my sisters. You know, I could have played lawyer and all that stuff while we were sitting there arguing, but we didn't. And we were so grateful that my mom had written this out and left perfect instructions for her. And that's her right there behind me. I don't know if you can see the picture. I sit here every day with her behind me, because she has given us so many ideas, so many things to follow, that I talk to people all the time. And I work with a group, as I believe you are on the board, I work with Compassion and Choices.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this is something we talk about. And maybe those who are listening will want to go to that website of Compassion and Choices. If you put in the words, you'll find it. But I know the blessing. And, you know, Black people sometimes think that if you talk about dying, that's going to make you die right there. So they don't like to talk about it. But let me just say, it is a blessing to be able to talk about what you want to do with your stuff. So I, write up things for people often who come to me and want to, and I'm so glad that they decide that this is the best way to go, and they aren't going to die the next day just because they wrote up what they want to do, you know, once they
exactly.
die. All right, well, let's go on with that. That's good, and I'm sure everybody, even my grandma, can understand what intestate means.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say I don't have a lot of money of assets. Why do I need to write a will? We hear people say that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good idea, or is it a waste of time?
Absolutely not. If you have anything of value and you want to make sure that it is handled a specific way when you leave here, you should put it in writing for all of the reasons that we've just been talking about. You know, unfortunately, many times our understanding of a lot of issues is shaped by what we see on TV. Now, I'm about to show my age here now. You know, I think back to old shows like Dallas and Dynasty.
Oh, my. I remember those, too.
And we think, oh, well, when we hear them talk about wills and trust and all of that kind of stuff, oh, well, that's just for the very rich people or the wealthy people. And that's mm-hmm. not the case at all, you know, mm-hmm. because we're all going to leave here. It's a question of when, not if. And as a result of that, if you have anything of value that you want to make sure goes to a specific family member, or, and let us not forget this either, because, you know, more and more of us are starting to become philanthropic. So mm-hmm. with that being the case, if I want to make sure that, you know, my investment portfolio or my house goes to support my university or my church or what have you, the only way they can know to follow those instructions is to have it in writing and put it in a will, regardless of the amount of money or assets you have or don't have. So when in doubt, write it out.
that's a good statement. And for those of you who are just joining us, we're talking with our brother, Ricardo Thomas, from Louisiana, from my home state, I get to say, and very proud of him. We have worked together on this issue, and I'm sure we'll continue to. And this morning, I asked him to share with you many of the things that will, you know, keep you from having challenges at the end of life. And no, you won't die just because you wrote out your will, you know. You know, it could be something as simple, say, as a ring that one of your family members always said, oh, I love that ring. And you decide you want to leave it for them. That can go in your will, right?
That's correct.
Or just any, in terms of my sisters, it would be our clothing.
Right.
Saying, oh, yeah, well, you can have this dress, you know, but not until I'm gone. Okay. Yeah, we do talk about those things. In fact, we'll be coming to Louisiana in a couple of weeks, because we always go there to celebrate Mother's Day. My mom is gone on now, but we still celebrate Mother's Day, with my sisters, my brothers, nieces, nephews, cousins. And that's a whole lot of people.
Oh, wow. That's
this
nice.
This year, we've decided to all stay in the same house. Now, we don't know how that's going to come out yet, but we hope it will come out very well.
Okay,
let's go on to another question, because I'm sure we've got a lot of listeners who are interested in this subject. But what are advance directives, and why do I need them if I don't have anything?
And I'm so glad you asked that question. And it's really a timely one in light of what we all, or what the world has experienced over the last 4 years. And advanced directives, also known as a healthcare proxy, provides instructions in the event you are still living, but are incapacitated and unable to make healthcare decisions on your own behalf. And there's one word that I have to say, or two words I can say, that can bring all of this to the surface: COVID and the pandemic. And we realize, you know, this is the first time in most of our lifetimes when, whether it was ourselves or a loved one, had to go into the hospital and we could not be in there with them. Or perhaps we were in the hospital, or a loved one was in the hospital, and because they were on a ventilator or a declined health state, that they could not make decisions on their own behalf as to what type of treatment they wanted or did not want. And so whereas to eliminate that burden on a family member, if there's one that exists, to have that in writing again as to what your wishes are. Basically, the theme of everything we're going to be talking about today has to do with allowing you to be in control as it relates to when we transition on, but also while we're still here. And again, so as to not have to put those hard decisions on our spouses, partners, children, you know, as it relates to, do we want to resuscitate mom or dad? You know, do they want to be on a ventilator or not? You know, all of those types of things. If you have it in writing, then the hospitals, the doctors have to follow the wishes of the individual, as opposed to, like we were talking about with the wills and not having a will and family drama there. Just think about the family drama when someone's in the hospital and somebody said, well, mama told me not to resuscitate her. And your sibling said, well, no, mama told me yesterday to resuscitate her, and all of this kind of stuff. Again, if you have it in writing with that healthcare proxy or advanced directives, now it's not up to us, the siblings. It's up to mama or daddy, because they've already spoken on their own behalf and put it in writing.
Absolutely. There's another question that we're having to deal with these days. And, you know, it is, I don't want to be burned up when I die. Is that one of the kinds of things that you would put in your will or whatever? Okay.
Well, certainly, yeah, you would want to put that in the will. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because particularly for our community, I mean, we're realizing that the cost to bury someone is continuing to escalate. And you know, like the old saying goes, you pay coming in this world and you pay going out. And unfortunately, many of us are still grossly unprepared for final expenses or burial. Again, I'm about to show my age again, because, you know, back in the day when we didn't have the money, you know, for a decent burial and so forth, for Cousin Ray Ray and so forth, we would have car washes and suppers, you know, to raise the money to do it. Now, today, we've gotten sophisticated. Now we're doing GoFundMe pages, when all of that could have been eliminated by proper planning through having the right life insurance to take care of that. So to get to your point, when you're talking about folks saying, I don't want to be burned or what have you, many folks are opting to go that route because it's less expensive.
Absolutely.
And so that's what ends up happening in a lot of cases, that if they can't afford, you know, the entire regular funeral cost, you know, service and all the related things, obviously the body still has to be handled. So the least expensive way is, you know, is going through and having the cremation and so forth. Well, so if I don't want that route, then I better make sure I have the funds there necessary to give me the kind of burial that I desire.
You know, sometimes I hear people say, maybe I call or hear or ask the question, well, when is the burial? When is the funeral? And they don't have an idea, because they have to wait all this time to, as you said, raise the money to go to GoFundMe, or wait until relatives from all over the country, the world, you know, send a few dollars to do it. And what we're talking about here saves us from having to do that. You know, most people try to bury the loved ones, say, within a week or 10 days at least. But these days, as you said, with that cost going up, I notice a lot of people waiting a month, 6 weeks, etc., to get their loved one.
But can I give you a perfect example on that? And I'm glad you mentioned that. And this is one that the world knows, and it's unfortunate. Let's not forget about our brother James Brown.
Oh, yes. I was at the funeral. Yes, I remember. That was like a Zoom.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I don't have to say anything else. I believe it was 6 months before his burial took place. You know, it was an inordinate amount of time because of, like you said, all the, you know, battling and disputes and, you know, and things like that. And again, it shows that these issues cut across all lines, regardless of how much wealth you have or don't have. These are all issues that we should plan for.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of James Brown, Boston just had an event honoring James Brown because he was in Boston the night that Dr. Martin Luther King was murdered. Yeah. And whatever he said and did, the performance he did, kept that city from having the problem that many other cities had where, you know, they were damaged, burned up, whatever. Yeah. And so they celebrated him this past Saturday. Okay. I have a young friend that I met at James Brown's funeral whose name is young James Brown, as you know, James Brown named him that. And he put on that celebration. He does it, and all over the country, he still celebrates James Brown. I tell people, I love James Brown. Some people didn't like that song about "This Is a Man's World." I said, "Well, I loved it because you didn't hear the rest of it." He said, "Exactly. It couldn't be nothing without a woman or a girl." You know,
that's right. That's
we
right.
We laugh about that all the time. But I'm glad you used James. In fact, he was buried ultimately in the backyard of, I think, one of his daughters.
Okay. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
I don't know if that's a permanent place or years later, whether it will be moved somewhere else.
Yeah.
Okay. People talk about a power of attorney. What is a power of attorney? What does it give me the power to do or whatever?
Okay. And again, another great question there. A power of attorney, and it's still keeping with the same theme that we've been talking about, because a power of attorney gives another person authority to handle transactions that you designate on your behalf while you're still living. Mm-hmm. Let me reemphasize that, while you're still living, meaning that when breath leaves the body, so does the power of that mm-hmm. document.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where the will picks up from there. But again, going back to the example I used earlier of COVID and so forth, you know, obviously, financial affairs and decisions still have to go on outside of those health related decisions. And you need to be able to designate someone that you trust, that is knowledgeable, that can take care of your business or financial affairs. So whether it's paying bills or making purchases or what have you, they have to have the legal authority to do so. And again, you know, I can't say, "Oh, well, that's my best friend, or that's my brother, or that's mm-hmm. my sister. I've been knowing them since we were in kindergarten." Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because on the other end, whatever entity that you're dealing with, they want to make sure that you have the legal right to mm-hmm. make decisions on behalf of that person. Otherwise, let's say, for instance, I go out there and say, "Oh, well, Dr. Faye Williams told me that I could do this for her." And they mm-hmm. said, "Well, oh, okay, you look like a trustworthy guy." And mm-hmm. then you come back and say, "Well, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I never gave Ricardo permission to do anything on my behalf." So with, with that proper documentation through that power of attorney, that mm-hmm. allows for you to make those important decisions. Secondly, it also works toward keeping family peace, because mm-hmm. obviously, only one person can make a decision at a time. And, you know, and again, we see this many times in families mm-hmm. when you have multiple siblings and there may be indecision between them. Oh, well, this one says we're going to do this, the other two says the other, and so forth. Well, again, if we put it in writing and we designate it, well, John is going to be, or Susan is going to be my power of attorney, as long as they're not doing anything out of order, mm-hmm. that's where that document comes into place.
Okay, but suppose, Ricardo, today I write my will.
Okay.
Date on it. But next week, my sister comes with one that was written next week. Which one of us rules on that? They're different things.
So that's a good question, and that does come up occasionally, you know, with that. That's why it's important, and this is more on the legal side with it, and that's obviously your expertise. But when we have wills, it's important to make sure it's recorded and documented. And if there are any modifications to the will, you know, any addendums and things of that nature, we need to make sure those are properly recorded and documented as well. Because there have been cases, many, many cases over the years, when folks have found multiple versions of a person's will. I've even dealt with that with some clients of mine of a few years ago. And, you know, it becomes an issue of which version of the will is valid. And of course, if it can be proved and documented that, you know, the date, you know, that is shown, plus having witnesses and so forth, that's why they always ask for that as well. Then it's usually the most current version of the will is the one that's valid, unless there has been some concern, like if there's been some diminished mental capacity. You know, if you remember that old case of, and I don't know why today I'm remembering all of this old stuff. But we remember the case with Anna Nicole Smith. Remember her?
Yes.
And the guy she was dating or what have you, and his grown children were not happy with the fact that dad, you know, had put a young 20-something year old Anna Nicole Smith and this man who was 80 plus years old, you know, he had put her into his will, and it changed a lot of what they would get. And, you know, there was a battle for quite some time as to how that would be distributed and so forth. But as long as we follow the proper legal guidelines of having it documented and recorded, and I'll go back to something you said earlier when you mentioned about the will being found in the Bible. And fortunately, you all were able to find it. But it's important that when we have a will, that it is accessible and someone knows where it is.
You know, my mom knew that sister was always going to go to the Bible. And that's exactly who found it, you know.
So that was perfect in that scenario. But I've had situations where folks have drawn up a perfectly good will and they put it in a safe deposit box, which is the absolute worst place to put it.
Yeah, because the person doesn't have the key to it.
Exactly.
Wow.
And then, you know, if you have a safe at the bank or what have you, when the person dies, you cannot go access that safe until you start the succession process and whoever the executor is and so forth. And again, all of those are instructions are with the will. So it's important, you know, to have a copy of it that's accessible and where someone knows where it is.
Well, for those of you who are just joining us, we're talking and having a great time giving all this great information. Some of it is good for me to know. You know, people think lawyers know everything. We don't know everything. So it's good to hear you explain it in this way. But for those of you just joining us, we're talking with Ricardo Thomas. And I'm glad to say he is my homie.
That's right.
Anna, yes, and we're sort of working in the same field, but from a different angle. And so I appreciate this conversation. I don't know how many of you've heard of Compassion and Choices, but we both work with them. I don't know the website and all of that. I should have looked it up, but the subject itself, Compassion and Choices. And you might even hear me on there because I've made a few statements, talked a little bit there. And occasionally I get notes from students at colleges in Oklahoma and other places wanting to ask me more about the subject. So I know who to call now if I ever talk about this subject. Because I'll tell you, I had a student who asked me just a long list of questions last week before. And I had to call on someone in Compassion and Choices to help me with some of those questions they were asking. But I got them into the student. She wrote me and said they were perfect. I'm so happy. So you might hear my voice sometimes if you are looking at something called Compassion and Choices, because I do work with them. And you are on the board of directors, or what is your role?
Actually, I'm a member of the African American Leadership Council.
That was the conference where I met you. Okay.
Yes.
All right, then. Well, let's go on. We are going to be taking a little break in just a few moments, but let's do a few more questions because this is so good. And again, for those of you who are just joining us, you'll be able to go to WPFWFM.org and you will be able to find this replayed, if you can't hear it all today. I know some people are at work. Some people are listening while they're at work. But if you don't hear all of it, you can go to WPFWFM.org and then click on archives and today's date. And it may not be up today, but in a day or two, you will be able to hear the conversation. And I hope you will recommend it to friends also who need to know this information. Okay, well, let's go to another question. I think we can take one more before we go to a break. But insurance. Now, again, a lot of us don't have insurance for these things. But what is the role of the insurance in the end of life or terminal illness phase?
Okay, again, another great question. Life insurance, of all the insurances that we have in life, life insurance is the only one that has a guaranteed payoff. And this is what I mean. We buy auto insurance in case we have a wreck. We buy homeowners insurance in case there is a fire or flood or something like that. We buy medical insurance in case we get sick. We buy disability insurance in case we become disabled. Life insurance is the only one that's a guaranteed payoff. Why? Because we all know we're going to leave here someday. So the question is when.
Mr. Gregory used to say that's betting against yourself. You, they're better you're going to live and you're better you're going to die.
Well, they want you to live longer, obviously, to be able to collect premiums. But really, it's been my opinion, you know, since I've been a practicing financial advisor, that labeling it as life insurance is really a misnomer, because there's nothing you can buy that can bring somebody back to life. What you should really call it is income replacement, because when someone dies, the only thing that stops is their paycheck. All the bill collectors still want their money. So how does this fit into the context of what we're talking about here? So when we're talking about end of life, regular death and natural causes, or if we're talking about end of life in the context of terminal illness or extended illnesses, say like a dementia or what have you, it requires funds to be able to take care of those things. And one tool that can be utilized effectively to fill the gap is life insurance. And so having the right type of policy, having the right amount of coverage. And again, depending on what phase we are in our lives, obviously, if I'm young and have a family, I want to have as much life insurance as possible to be able to maintain the family lifestyle that we had while I was living when I've now transitioned on. Now, that changes over the years, because as my kids grow up and I've paid off the house and I get into retirement, we don't say, oh, well, I don't need life insurance anymore. I may not need as much. So then the objective of the life insurance changes from taking care of those expenses if I die too soon to now taking care of those final expenses and avoiding those issues that we were just talking about of having to do GoFundMes and car washes and suppers to pay off, you know, for a decent funeral service, not to mention the life insurance proceeds can be utilized to pay off any remaining debts, so there would not be a financial burden on the family going forward. Because sometimes people forget that when we die, the only thing that stops is breath and the paycheck. MasterCard, Visa, and all the rest of them still want their money. And so as to not leave those burdens on our spouses or against our estate with our kids or our siblings, that's where the life insurance can come in to fill that void.
Okay. All right, then. Oh, I got so much more I want to ask you. And I know you need a break, so we're going to take it in about 30 seconds. But this is wonderful. You're giving great information. I know our listeners are appreciating this so much, because many people just have not thought about these things. Now, you know, you were talking about Dallas and other places a while ago. Do people actually have a sit-down meeting like this and go over the will after the person dies, or do they just kind of like go ahead and secretly do what it says to do?
No. What you'll find, and I can attest to this being a practicing financial advisor, is that people actually sit down before and after. You know, so part of my job is to bring awareness to these issues before the need arises. because we know these things can happen.
Yeah, hold on that point. We're going to take a brief break and we'll be right back. And I got a whole lot more questions I got to ask you. So you breathe deeply. We'll be right back.
All righty.
Born of Haitian descent, Jerry Paris, WPFW's general manager, is moving on to retirement. On April 14th, from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m., we will celebrate his departure at the VIP Room, 6201 3rd Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., with island flair, steel drums, a DJ, and food from the islands. That's April 14th from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. For more information and tickets, call 202-368-4081 or visit Eventbrite and search for Jerry Paris Retirement. Seating is limited.
Welcome back to Wake Up and Stay Woke. We're talking with Ricardo Thomas from Louisiana, my home state, and we're just having a great time giving out all this great information. I'm asking the questions. He's giving out the information. So let's go back to him and learn some more. There's just a lot more we want to ask, and we're going to probably have to ask you to come back another time.
I would love it. Again.
For those who can't listen to the whole program today, don't forget, you can go to WPFWFM.org and click archives, and you can hear this replay. As I said, it may not be ready for today, but in the next day or so, you will be able to go to the archives and hear this. So please call your friends who aren't on this morning and tell them they should have been on, but if not, we still made a provision for them to hear Ricardo give all these great answers. So let's go to another question. My sister, one of my sisters, so they won't know which one I'm telling on, but her husband is in, not long-term care, but rehabilitation right now. And I spoke with her and she said, oh, he's got to come home tomorrow. And I said, well, is he well? Is he okay? And she said, no, she said, but if he stays another day, I'm going to have to pay $200 a day for his care. So how does the person determine how much they're going to need? You know, they may have one insurance, and they did because he's been there several days, but now it's running out. Is there another kind of insurance they should have gotten?
Yeah, so that's a very good question as well. And so depending on the age of the individual and the circumstances, it sounds like we're talking about Medicare, not to be confused with Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about rehabilitation and things related to that, with a Medicare insurance, we're allotted so many days per year that Medicare will cover. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, once those number of days are exhausted, then any additional days will have to come out of pocket. Mm-hmm. And so obviously the medical facilities are keenly aware of that. Mm-hmm. So Medicare and their administrators are definitely aware of how many days you've been in and what they're paying for and what they won't pay for. So it sounds like you're running up on the limit of the number of days for that particular state. So with that, and again, I'm speaking in general intentionally, because not knowing, you know, specific, no two people's situations are the same. But typically, as we get older, and this is something that we really, to most effectively plan for it, we have to do it earlier. Long-term care insurance. And this is an area that's really, really, for lack of a better word, has been a sticky area, a sticky subject for our community because of the way we were culturally raised, meaning that when grandma and grandpa, you know, got up in age and got a little bit weak where they couldn't take care of themselves or stay at home by themselves, then it was not uncommon to get that back room of the house and make that grandma's room, or get that rollaway bed and put it in the living room and have grandma or grandpa there. But that was only possible when, and I'm speaking traditionally speaking over the years, when husband worked, wife stayed at home, and someone was able to stay home and take care of grandma or grandpa. Now, due to financial needs, both individuals are having to work, and no one is able to stay home with grandma or grandpa to take care of them. Mm-hmm. Not only that, and this is something that I can relate to personally because my mom had Alzheimer's. And mm-hmm. so and it was just me. And so she got to a point, even though I had her at home, as her health declined, the mm-hmm. doctor said that she is now at a state where we will no longer allow for her to stay at home. So she will now have to go into a nursing home where mm-hmm. she can get that round-the-clock skilled care. Now, mm-hmm. remember, Medicare only covers so many days. Mm-hmm. Medicare does not cover long-term care. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. Now, remember, Medicaid is to provide medical coverage and insurance for those who cannot afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, so that being said, in order for her to go into adult daycare as I had her in, or to go into the nursing facility, either you have long-term care insurance or you pay out of pocket.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I'll tell you this, and this has been some 12, 13 years ago now, but here in Louisiana, in the New Orleans area in particularly, long-term care in a nursing home was running about $6,000 or $7,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's much more expensive than that here now, and certainly across the country. So that mm-hmm. could literally wipe out a family's retirement or whatever other funds very mm-hmm. quickly. So mm-hmm. that's, again, where long-term care coverage comes in to take that financial burden off of the family, such that if I can't be taken care of at home, or if I need home health and might need a nurse to come in 2-3 days a week, as opposed to having to raid all of the assets that we've accumulated over the years, or mm-hmm. having to exhaust all of my retirement income just to pay for that, mm-hmm. the long-term care coverage can come in to hopefully fill the gap. Now, the last part I'll mention is statistics show that the average length of time that a person lives, and of course, there's always folks who live beyond that, but most long-term care coverages are designed to provide a benefit somewhere between 4 to 7 years. Okay, so in answering your question there is how much to have. You know, you really have to do your homework as to what type of facility you want to go into, or what type of care you may need. And then the last part of it is how much you can afford, because all of these great ideas and plans you talk about is all subject to affordability. You know, I can build the greatest plan, but if I don't have the fuel to go into it, it's just a piece of paper.
Yeah. Well, so, I think in that area, we were blessed. I don't know exactly how my sister there handled it, but there's six. My mom had, well, 7 girls, but then one had passed on. My mm-hmm. mom absolutely wanted to stay at home. She was able to stay there, but there was, as you said, a nurse or someone who came in occasionally, but we took care of her. We took turns. You know, if I went home, then another sister came the next week or the next 2 weeks or what have you. And you're absolutely right. That did not last for a very long time, but we were able to handle it financially and otherwise, because there were so many girls in our family who had the ability to go there and give my sister, who lived in the house behind my mom, a break or rest. So I'm glad we were able to do that. But
and let me add this to your story, too. Not only did you have a lot of sisters where you all could rotate, but uh-huh. you had siblings that were willing, because yes. we all know that yes. not every time people yes. are willing right. or able to do it, because sometimes, right. you know, their own family situations or absolutely. Their spouses may say, I don't know if we can handle this. So there's so many different moving well, parts. And I'm just glad to hear that in your case, that you had a team.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. My mom always told us when we were growing up, you know, maybe she felt kind of bad one day and we'd sit around and we were looking worried. She would say, oh, baby, don't worry about me. I'm going to live at least until I'm 100. And she actually made it to 99.
Really? Oh,
the
wow.
She had told us that she made it to her 100 because you have to count those 9 months.
Right.
So actually, you know, it was all of my sisters were there when we knew wonderful. It was about time. I don't know how we knew, but so one of my sisters decided everybody needs to come home, you know, and yes. we did. And we were standing there with her when she opened her eyes, mm-hmm. looked around the room, closed them, and left us.
Oh,
Miss Lamont
wow.
here. So I have, well, she hasn't yeah. left me because I still keep her right here behind me.
Exactly.
But, we didn't know all the things you're talking about, but we just did some of them, you know, just to make things better. And we were certainly blessed to have a sister who lived right there by my mother so mm-hmm. that when we were not there, she was taking care, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. We've got time for a few more questions here. What is the difference between Medicare and Medicaid? I think you've sort of explained
yeah.
it. Mm-hmm. And how does it impact the end of life experience? If there's anything else you wanted to say on that, you can. But if not, we can move on to the next question.
Yeah, we pretty much covered a lot of that yesterday.
Okay, I thought so, yeah. How do you select the right person to be your power of attorney or your executor? Is it usually best to, say, select a family member or a best friend or a professional person?
All of the above. It really depends upon the individual. And I'll use this as an example, especially when I have clients that have young children. And mm-hmm. I think this really makes the case really clearly. You know, mm-hmm. I may have a sibling who's a great care provider, but who's horrible with money.
Mm-hmm.
So I may say that, you know, if I have young kids, if something happens to me, my untimely death, I might want that sister or brother to take care of my son, but mm-hmm. I don't want them to handle their finances. Mm-hmm. I might get another person. Uh-huh. So we have to step back and be honest about the mm-hmm. individuals and the roles we want them to play. I mean, mm-hmm. if the person, and I may love them to death, and every month their lights are cut off, you know, mm-hmm. do I really want them to handle my finances? Maybe
yeah,
not.
You know, you don't want to say this, but not long ago, I had a woman who came to me and she wanted me to do all this writing up for her. And her husband came with her and she wanted him to be. And I looked at him and I said, he may be gone before you. I mean, to myself, I didn't say that to her. So is it a good idea to name if this person is unable to do it, then put another name there?
Absolutely. Okay. You can name successors mm-hmm. As it relates to both your powers of attorney and mm-hmm. executor. So you can name a co-executor or a successor mm-hmm. power of attorney. And that's a very mm-hmm. good point because mm-hmm. none of us know when we're going to leave here. Mm-hmm. So by having those documents in place and having a backup or a contingency plan, you know, mm-hmm. gives better coverage. Because here's the other thing to keep in mind, too, to your point. And you know this as a legal professional, I can only execute these documents while I am still of sound mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's say I appoint someone and now they've died before me. And so now I need someone else, but I no longer have the mental capacity to do these kind of documents. Then mm-hmm. what do? I can't make those decisions. So mm-hmm. that's where having that contingency plan of having a backup power of attorney listed or a co-executor helps to reduce the odds of, you know, if something happens and I don't have that mental capacity, that I do have a backup person in place. That's why football teams have backup quarterbacks.
Okay. Well, let's see. Grambling and Southern, I can think of. Both of them have good quarterbacks usually. I went to Grambling, of course. let's see. I want to ask, in terms of are people sometimes don't really trust anyone to make this decision. It's mm-hmm. but it still gets asked. I know even when you're in the hospital, they'll ask you mm-hmm. if you get to a point where it seems you're not going to live. Do you find that people you deal with often say, well, I want my son to make the decision whether to leave me here, let me suffer, or disconnect me? Do you get that?
Absolutely. And that goes back into the earlier conversation we were talking about with the healthcare proxy and advanced directives. You know, mm-hmm. oftentimes now when we go in the hospital, if we're having any type of major procedure, you know, mm-hmm. there's that stack of paperwork that mm-hmm. they want us to fill out up mm-hmm. front. And mm-hmm. a lot of that paperwork has to do with making those critical decisions in mm-hmm. the event something doesn't go as planned. Mm-hmm. So some of that can mm-hmm. already be in place and addressed if we have these documents in place that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So you know, if I already have a healthcare proxy and mm-hmm. and have decided who's going to make this decision or who's going to do that, or I've already made those decisions on my own, then mm-hmm. the hospital will ask for a copy of those documents because mm-hmm. now I've already made my own decisions. I'm not going to put that burden. And that could be very, very difficult for mm-hmm. a child to have to do on behalf of their parent to right. say, well, okay, I see mom is on life support. Go ahead and pull the plug. That could be very, very tough and traumatizing. Right. So if mom has already made that decision to say, well, look, you know, after so many days, or if I've my condition has declined to a certain area, I do not want to be on life support, or I don't want to be resuscitated. Well, now we have to respect and honor her wishes and mm-hmm. not have to put that burden on an individual. But that question does come up, and I do try to pose that scenario with my clients when we're doing mm-hmm. estate planning, because as you said earlier, many times we don't like to think about it or talk about it, but these are real.
And it doesn't kill us if we talk about it.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Now, earlier you and I talked about our connections with compassion and choices.
Yes.
What are some of the resources they have, and should we refer people to a group like Compassion and Choices? You know, what kind of things can they help with?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that question. Well, Compassion and Choices, well,
and we'll ask them to pay us for this ad for the
exactly.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, our theme is planning equals peace. And as I alluded to at the beginning of our conversation today, hopefully folks listening caught the theme that throughout all of these questions that we went through, by mm-hmm. having your ducks in a row, by having letters of instruction, or by having information, it creates a peaceful atmosphere so mm-hmm. that when we're leaving this world, that it doesn't create or open up new drama for the family to deal with. I mean, it's enough to have to cope with the loss of a loved one, you know, then to add on insult to injury, to not have a plan or guidance in place to deal with all these new moving parts. So with mm-hmm. Compassion and Choices, where they really specialize in being a great resource for end-of-life decisions, there are a host of resources on the Compassion and Choices website. They can go to compassionandchoices.org, mm-hmm. and they can look and click on the links of the different scenarios as it relates to end-of-life events. You know, one area that seems to be quite prevalent now is dementia. You know, again, I'm showing my age again. You know, we used to say, you know, back in the day, as grandma and grandpa got old, oh, they're getting senile, you know, and all of that.
Yeah,
kind of
that
stuff.
Was a term used, yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that in some of those cases, and certainly, you know, there is some mental decline and senility there, but in some of those cases, they could have been some form of dementia. Mm-hmm. Well, Compassion and Choices website has a great tool on the site as it relates to dementia and trying to understand all the different aspects of dementia, mm-hmm. what are resources that are available out there. It's a really, really great tool that I really encourage folks to go and get that information. Mm-hmm. Not only that, on the site, it talks about the importance of having a will, which we've been talking mm-hmm. about earlier. And there's mm-hmm. an opportunity to go on there, again, subject to what state you're in. As you mm-hmm. know, in Louisiana, we are unique in that we are under the Napoleonic Code.
Yes, yes.
Everybody else.
I had to come back and redo my brother's will after I said it, because there were some things I didn't know because I didn't study in Louisiana. That was exactly. going to be my next question. And I always ask if my guests will give out a way that people can reach them if they need your service. Now, in law, we can only practice in our own state, but we can look up rules to tell somebody for another state if we want to. Usually we wind up sending them to that person. But if someone wanted to secure your services or ask you a question or, you know, see a website or whatever, is there any way that they can do that?
Absolutely. So there's different parts to that question, and I'll answer it this way. So, yeah, so currently I am licensed in 12 states. Mm-hmm. So if they're in those 12 states, that's not a problem. But mm-hmm. even if they are in a state that I'm not currently licensed in, mm-hmm. you know, if they wish to, you know, to retain me as an advisor, then I can go go through the process of adding that additional state so mm-hmm. that I can be registered to do business with them, you mm-hmm. know, in their applicable state. But if they want general financial information and knowledge, not only on the topics that we've discussed today, but mm-hmm. other important issues, retirement planning, education planning, all those different moving parts, they are welcome to go to my website at www.thomaswaddell, let me spell that, thomaswaddell.net. That's www.thomaswaddell.net. And we have a wealth of resources. We have a free newsletter they can sign up for. We have videos on a variety of financial topics mm-hmm. that they can go there and get information. They can also call our office at area code 504-456-6464. Again, that's area code 504-456-6464. Again, that information is on the website as well. And I'll say, as one of my professors said to me a long time ago, the mark of a scholar is not to know everything, but to know where to find it. So if they call with a question and I don't have the answer at that time, I don't have a problem in saying, I don't know, but I will research it and then get back to you, you know, with that. But they are more than welcome to reach out. And if we can be of assistance, we can. And if we cannot, we can hopefully point you in the right direction, you know, to someone who may be able to help you in your area if it is something that we cannot assist you with.
Well, I'm so glad you defined scholar, because I'm always having to tell people, I don't know, but I have a woman just night before last, I think, because they do call from all over the world and everywhere in different time zones. Where can I find a lawyer who handles X, Y, and Z?
Exactly.
In another state. And I had to give her that answer, you know, to handle the kind of case that she wanted. But a lot of people don't understand that just because you're a lawyer or just because you're in finance or whatever, you don't know the answer to everything.
Exactly.
But as you said, you generally can refer them. We're just about out of time, so I know we're going to have you back. If you'll give us some more time, this time you've given us is worth so much today. This program is in it's in honor of Dick Gregory, who is my best friend. I've written one book about him, and I'm doing a part two now. There was so much to that friendship. But I wanted to ask if you ever met him. Do you know who he is? Do you know anything about him or remember anything he said or did?
Well, I've never met him, unfortunately, but I definitely know who he is. Mm-hmm. I know there was a documentary recently on cable about the life of Dick Gregory.
Was I in it? Did you see me in it? I see you missed me.
I'm
the
sorry.
One and only Dick Gregory? Was it the one and only
that, that's
Dick
the one. Yep,
who was
that's
in it with all the greats, to Kevin Hart and Nick Cannon.
Yes.
I had a little bit part in that one, so I'm glad.
Oh, wow. See, I got to go back and look again.
Well, let me try. I had on a red sweater or something like that. So
okay. But yeah, he was phenomenal. I mean, obviously, when you look at his life's work, mm-hmm. And the things that he stood for and so forth. I mean, obviously, I'm preaching to the choir, so I'm definitely familiar with Mr. Gregory and all the great contributions that he made. And certainly now I have to go back tonight and look at.
Okay. It's where all of the comedians are talking, you know, Dave Chappelle and everybody, and I'm in there somewhere.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
This has been so wonderful. Thank you so much, Ricardo, and I look forward to meeting you. And, you know, I get to Louisiana sometime. Are you in New Orleans or Baton Rouge?
Actually, I'm out in Metairie, which is
Metairie.
Next door to New Orleans. Yeah.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Thank you.
But thank you for having me, and I look forward to the next time.
All right. Love you. Take care.
Yeah, love you too. Thank you. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
Everybody, no more sleeping in bed. no more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh yeah. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. 'Cause they're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Oh yeah, the world won't get no better. Yeah, if we just let it be. Oh, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, yeah, just you and me. The doctors think the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and catch all the hell. They don't have so very long before the judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Oh yeah. Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. We can do it if we all hold a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in my mind. Surely things will work out, because they do every time. Yeah, yeah. The world won't be no better if we just let it be.
Thank you for listening to the Just Completed program. If you'd like to offer feedback on any of our programming, please email us at info@wpfw.org.
ADASI, the African Diaspora Ancestral Commemoration Institute, will host a free DC Emancipation Day program entitled Black Liberation Struggles in Global Africa. Then and now, on Tuesday, April 16th, 2024, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Enlightened Inc., 1205 Marion Barry Avenue Southeast. The program will commemorate the enslaved ancestors who crossed over the Old Navy Yard Bridge, the precursor to the 11th Street Bridge in Southeast, from enslavement in Maryland to freedom in the District of Columbia after the abolition of slavery in D.C. on April 16, 1862. It will feature esteemed historian C.R. Gibbs and many others. For information, please call 202-505-2896 or visit adasiancestors.org. That's A-D-A-C-I ancestors.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Dori Ladner was a courageous civil rights activist. Her legacy lives on every time we choose to confront injustice. Dori Ladner's funeral will be held this Saturday, April 13th, at Shiloh Baptist Church, 1500 9th Street, Northwest, D.C., at 11 a.m. All are welcome to come and bid farewell to this icon of the civil rights movement. WPFW extends condolences to the family of Dori Ladner.
The search process for WPFW's next general manager is underway. Successful management searches begin by having conversations with stakeholders to clarify and document expectations for future management. Therefore, WPFW's local station board is inviting all stakeholders to participate in our online survey. To complete the survey, please click the link on WPFW's website. Because we need your input, the deadline for the survey has been extended to Friday, April 12, 2024. Thank you.
Born of Haitian descent, Jerry Paris, WPFW's general manager, is moving on to retirement. On April 14th, from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m., we will celebrate his departure at the VIP Room, 6201 3rd Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., with island flair, steel drums, a DJ, and food from the islands. That's April 14th from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. For more information and tickets, call 202-368-4081 or visit Eventbrite.